Hello, Rock and Roll Rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. I'm sorry I haven't posted anything in like a month. There's been a lot going on in my life, mostly good things, but time-consuming things nonetheless, and I just haven't had the time to keep up with this, even though I still love classic rock. In fact, to the point that this will more than likely be my last episode, I felt the need to do one rather than just leave y'all hanging. I will still be posting things on my Instagram for classic rock when I have the time, and on my WordPress blog, which are both Ramble On with Rosie, and even on my YouTube, I will probably occasionally post a video if I feel the need to elaborate, you know, via a speech presentation on a classic rock theme. Otherwise, I'll keep it to text posts and short reels and videos on the Instagram, which might also get posted to the YouTube as well. That being said, this is not just a farewell episode. It is a episode where I break down one of the most influential songs on my life. Surprise, surprise, it's a Springsteen jam. And it's like we're coming full circle because it's one of the Springsteen songs I discussed in my very first episode, which was The Car, The Girl, and The Getaway. And in this case, it is the ultimate Car, Girl, and Getaway song of Racing in the Streets. Racing in the Street is just, I vividly remember the first time I heard this song, even though it was the Roger Taylor version. I weirdly heard that version before the Springsteen version. Roger Taylor of Queen, the drummer, who I absolutely love his vocal style. He had a bigger range than Freddie Mercury did even, and I love his kind of smooth but raspy voice. Like, it's not Rod Stewart rasp, it's much more smooth than that, but he still has a phenomenal singing voice. I mean, he is the High Galileos, as they point out in the Bohemian Rhapsody film. So yeah, Roger can hit some high notes, but his overall singing voice, well, it sounds like on Queen's I'm in Love with My Car. And Roger's solo work is definitely worth checking out and looking into. I enjoy it. It was one of the first big binges I did as I started to really get into classic rock lore. And I love his stuff. I love finding the more obscure artists and looking into their discography, which is definitely what I did with Roger Taylor, and that's how I found this version of Racing in the Street, which I don't even have a favorite version because I love Roger Taylor's Racing in the Street. I love the studio version of Racing in the Street that made it on Darkness on the Edge of Town, and I also really love the 1978 outtake version, which is on The Promise, which is a little more, not orchestral, but it's got more of a complex arrangement. Like, there's more body to the arrangement versus the slightly more stripped back version that made it on to Darkness on the Edge of Town. That being said, it's really a phenomenal song, and it's mostly in the lyrics. It's not even the lyrics of the whole song. This song would be one of the most impactful songs of my life, even if it was just the second half, because it's that beautiful thing that Springsteen does where he exhibits his understanding of the feminine soul and just the soul of people in general. It's phenomenal. Like, especially when you listen to the Roger Taylor version, there is like kind of a almost windy sound at the break right before it gets to I Met Her on the Strip 3 years ago in the Camaro with this dude from LA. The Roger Taylor version really like emphasizes the break that goes into that line and the sort of second half of the song where it's not, because the first half is basically composed of him talking about, well, racing in the street, and it doesn't get too philosophical until like the verses right before he introduces the girl, because he's just you know, the first section of lyrics is just him outlining what he drives, who his buddy is, what they do, and, you know, their ambition to win their car races. And then as you get to shift to the second part where it's, you know, we take all the action we can meet, and we cover all the Northeast states, and you know, laying out what they do when the strip shuts down. But, sorry, the light just went off in my room for some reason. Sorry. Do forgive. Electrical failures were not intended. Anyways, and so moving on from that, you know, the fire roads, and then you start getting into Springsteen's more philosophical side. Like, the first half could be almost any, you know, lyrically, it could be almost like any Beach Boys or, you know, car racing song. It's not that complex, philosophical, personal. But then you start getting that way towards the middle of the song with some guys, they just give up living and start dying little by little, piece by piece. I mean, that's a pretty weighty line to throw out there. Yeah, we went from, oh, we're having fun racing the street, to people are dying little by little and piece by piece. That slow depression that can eke up on you as you leave the juvenile day, halcyon days of Beach Boys songs and enter adulthood. And it's just the grind, and sometimes you don't even know what you're doing with your life. You're just like, I'm living, but am I though? Because I don't feel very alive. You know, hence the dying little by little and piece by piece. And but some guys come home from work and wash up and go racing in the street. And it's sort of like those two are in contrast to each other. So you've got the dudes who are just dying little by little and piece by piece, you know, not really alive anymore. And then you've got the guys who are trying to keep some of their youthful spirit alive, some of that joy of living, even if it is via just, you know, going car racing, which is, you know, an interesting way of posing how to live your life, which isn't, yet again, it's not common in a lot of songs, especially to put it out there in plain spoken, bold as day terms. Like, there's some, you know, indie rock and indie folk from, like, more my generation and stuff that had themes of, you know, being depressed with your life and things like that. But very seldom, if it was, a lot of it was just, we're depressed. There was no real hopeful side. And then some of the stuff, like, it's sort of more vague and impressionistic. It's not just there. Like, Bruce is a working man's songwriter, and he just puts it in plain terms. No metaphor, no vague poetry. But in it, he just presents such stark truths that it's, you know, and he does it in such a tender and compassionate way that it is poetic. I mean, obviously the words rhyme, so there's the poetry of that, but it has the power of good poetry to move you on an emotional level, even though he's just being quite blunt in most of his song lyrics, especially once you get after Born to Run, you know, really starting in Born to Run, and after that album, and goodness, Darkness on the Edge of Town is very blunt. Nebraska is super blunt. Born in the USA is super blunt, even though somehow people miss the point of the titular track. Don't ask me how. He's pretty ruthless. They just got caught up in the chorus, and I'm like, y'all know what he's singing about, right? He's singing about veterans getting screwed over. How are you not seeing this? But, regardless, he's very good at painting things starkly, but still with warmth and compassion and tenderness and love and a soul to them, where it's not just these are the facts and they suck. It's these are the facts, but here's the hope that can be found in them. It's you know, a great talent that very few songwriters have nailed down quite to the well. It's like Bruce Springsteen's little niche market is bold truths said plainly, but with compassion. Like, you got songs with bold truths, and you've got songs with truths that are hidden in metaphor, but Bruce's are bold and compassionate and loving and have a soul to them, like few other songwriters that I know of do. So, like I said, he contrasts the guys dying little by little, piece by piece, with the guys who come home, wash up, and go racing in the street. You know, it's the one and the other. You're either letting your life go by, or you're grabbing it by the steering wheel and doing something with it. So, in that sense, he is being somewhat metaphorical, but it's also a very practical metaphor that you can see the difference in just in how he's laying it out there, the one pitted against the other, you know. And it's not that the guys who are racing in the street aren't also dying little by little, piece by piece, but they're at least trying not to. They're putting up the good fight. To quote Dylan Thomas, their rage against the dying of the light. They're trying. It may not be working. They may be down in the dumps too, or their girlfriend maybe. We'll get to that. But they're at least trying. Which, you know, the refrain. We get to the girlfriend and the last third of the song that just kind of changed my life. Like, I felt so seen, because I was not in a good place when I first heard this song. I was down, depressed, had shut myself down, didn't feel anything anymore. I had, in the preceding months to me hearing this song, like the summer before, it would actually almost been 3-4 years, I guess 4 years ago, to the day practically, because it was early July. I had ended an engagement, and I didn't cry. I was that shut down. I didn't realize this. I didn't realize how messed up I was until after that, and the preceding weeks after, where I was just like, and months after, I was like, something's wrong with me to be that dead inside. Like, I was gonna marry this person, and I dumped them, and didn't even have a moment's pause of sadness. Because I'd never cared about them in the first place. Because I was that dead inside. I didn't realize it. That's the thing. Like, people think you're being cold-hearted. No, sometimes you just don't know. Because you didn't realize you had slowly slipped. You'd been dying little by little and piece by piece. And the very caring, compassionate, empathetic person that you once had been bruised and battered enough by life that you'd just slowly decided feeling wasn't worth it. And if you're not feeling, then you can't really be attached to somebody, and therefore doesn't faze you when you cut them out of your life. To be fair, side note, not that I'm getting too personal here, but the person was not treating me well and did need to be cut out of my life. So I didn't just break up with them because I was dead on the inside and I'm heartless. I broke up with them for good, logical, merit-filled reasons that everybody else that I know agreed with, too. So, just to vindicate myself on that footnote. But yeah, so here I was, dying little by little, piece by piece, and then I hear Racing in the Street, all the Roger Taylor version, and I had never felt so seen by a song. In fact, it started helping me be able to feel again, because I was like, I guess this is real, this happens, this isn't just me. It's a common occurrence enough that you feel that it's been written about in a song. You know, a very beautiful, moving song. So I was just like, oh. So it's not just me. Because especially the line about she sits on her poor daddy's... Where is the line? Let me... she sits on the porch of her daddy's house, but all her pretty dreams are torn, and stares off alone into the night with the eyes of one who hates for just being born. I'm like, that's a dark line, but I've been there, and I was in that phase when I first heard this song. But backtracking a little bit, because we weren't quite there, you know, he talks about how he met the girl, which again smacks of like a Beach Boys song, you know, he met the girl at a car race, yada yada yada, stole her from some other dude. You know, it's trite. It's sort of like a recurring theme in the song where you start with like the trite bubblegum topic and then you go into the adult side of it, of what that looks like when you're not a teeny bopper at the hop and 16, you know, burning mom and dad's money on gas every Friday night to impress the girls, and you're living an adult life that's not the pretty picture that you envisioned it to be. Because it's like in reference to Thunder Road, at least, which is sort of in my mind the prequel to Racing in the Street. Those songs perfectly pair up together. Thunder Road is like chapter one, or book one in the series, and Racing in the Street is the sequel. It you can't I will fight I would fight Bruce Springsteen himself on this one. They pair up too well, especially if you listen to the 78 version of Racing in the Street off The Promise, because it even begins with a harmonica part, same as Thunder Road does, but much more sad and thoughtful, which fits the song and the stage in life that the characters in the song are in. But yeah, so like, and like I said, or was going to say about Thunder Road, when he was asked at like, I guess he would be 20, he's 24, somewhere in there, when Born to Run comes out, and people are asking him, like, how could you write a line like we're scared and you're thinking you're maybe you're not that young anymore at 24? He's like, you're super young. And Bruce's response was, Vietnam had happened. None of us felt young anymore. Your giddy optimism about your future had been shattered. And Racing in the Street is the lives after the shattering. The lives of the hero and his girl when you're living in the day-to-day adult grind of reality, and not fanciful Beach Boy endless summer on the beach with cars and girls and bikinis life. It's real life. And so, that's sort of how the third, that's how the first two parts of the song link together. And then after the break, when you get to him talking about the girl, you have part one, which is, the I met her on the strip 3 years ago and stole her from the dude in the Camaro part, which bleeds into where she's at now, 3 years later. Where now there's wrinkles around my baby's eyes and she cries herself to sleep at night. Like, you don't get that in any other love song that I can think of. Any other song that I can think of off the top of my head. There may be some in less known genres, but certainly in classic rock, I can't think of very many, if any, other songs where the heroine is in a solid relationship and is still crying herself to sleep. Like, Bruce is full on confronting that whole very easy to fall into, but not healthy mentality that we have, where like our significant other will be the cause of our happiness, will solve all of our problems. That, the fairy tale ideal of we get married and everything's happily ever after. And Bruce is like, no. I mean, they may not be married at this point, but they've been in a 3-year relationship, so, in those day and age, they probably should have been or could have been married. And still, so here she is. This should be happily ever after time, according to your 50s and 60s bubblegum music. It is not. It is the reality of living where you can still be depressed. And it can have possibly nothing to do with your significant other. Like, you can be in the crying yourself to sleep at night, and it doesn't have a blessed thing. It do, you know, doesn't have anything to do with your significant other hurting you or not living up to your expectations. Life's not living up to their expectations is the general inference of this song. Like, it's not happily ever after. And his girlfriend's dealing with that. His wife, whatever she may be, his significant other is dealing with the adult feelings of disappointment or something. She's clearly depressed. She is crying herself to sleep at night. And I mean, it's interesting because it's, unlike your typical love song, Bruce's, lead male in this song isn't taking responsibility, isn't like, oh baby, what can I do to make you happy again, and what am I doing wrong? He's not trying to fix the problem, which infers that he's aware that the problem isn't something he can fix. It's something in her own soul that she has to sort through as she becomes a more adult person who, realizes that life. They had expectations for life that aren't going to come true, and how are you going to deal with that? What are you going to do with your life? you know, rather than staying trapped in your past. So, like, yet again, one of those things that Bruce does that I can't think of another songwriter who has ever really put that into a song. You know, where the girl is in a long-term relationship and is sad, and she doesn't, the expectation is not that the guy can solve the sadness. She's just sad. We don't even know why. But it doesn't seem to be Bruce's protagonist's fault. That's not in the song, that's not in any subtext, it's just there. And the most beautiful part of this is the protagonist in the song is okay with that. He's not breaking up with her or leaving her or divorcing her, depending on whatever kind of relationship they have, because she's depressed. This song gives women, or alternatively men, gives people in a committed romantic relationship permission to not be happy and worry about the person they're with leaving them for that. Because I don't know about y'all, but I was raised around a lot of people where the expectation was you're not allowed to be sad. You're not allowed to have emotions that are inconvenient for other people. If you do, you keep them to yourself. You don't let them know. You don't let other people see you crying because they'll feel bad that you're crying. Or they might think something's wrong at home. And you don't want anybody to think anything ill about you or your family, so you don't express any emotions that are inconvenient or embarrassing for anyone. Hence why you can have some mental health issues in adulthood. And here, the protagonist's girlfriend, significant other, whatever she may be, is expressing he's not leaving. He's not going anywhere. He's not, you're an inconvenience for me. He's not stop crying. Crying is stupid and won't solve anything. He's letting her experience her emotions, and he's still there for her. And that alone is mind-blowing. That's part of the reason why this song changed my life. I was like, here's, you know, my quote-unquote slick chrome American Prince, Bruce Springsteen, in Darkness on the Edge of Town. My favorite era, my favorite look, if we're talking crush factor. Everything about Darkness on the Edge of Town, Bruce, is the best Bruce. The songwriting, everything. So here's a song set in that era. So the handsome muscle car driving hero of every American girl's teenage dreams is not expecting perfection. Is not rejecting the inconvenient and ugly emotions that can come up in life. He's still there. Even though, like, when you get to the next line, when I come home, the house is dark, and she sighs, baby, did you make it all right? Like, the house is dark. She's not up, you know, with her hair perfectly done and her makeup on, waiting for him to get back from the car race. She didn't go to the car race with him to cheer him on. All these things that you'd sort of expect from your, you know, teeny bopper pop 60s songs about cars. You know, where the girl's usually either there or she's waiting for him on a date afterwards kind of vibes. She's not there. She's at home, crying herself to sleep in the dark. And he still loves her. Like, that's revolutionary in rock songs. So yeah, and then, I mean, but she is still trying, which is the perseverance of the human spirit that Bruce so often nails in his songs so well, is, you know, because she's still trying. She's, even though she's in the dark, crying, she's still asking, baby, did you make it all right? Like, she's still concerned for his well-being, even though she's too depressed to get dolled up and go to the racetrack and watch him race. So she still cares. As much as she's capable of caring at that point. You know, with what energy she has, she's still committing it to their relationship. Which is beautiful. Like, just, it's so grand. That's why this song is great. And then you get to the line where I was talking about where she sits on the porch of her daddy's house, but all her pretty dreams are torn. She stares off alone into the night with the eyes of one who hates for just being born. I mean, I don't know about you, but for a lot of us in adulthood, You have faced some point where you feel like all your pretty dreams have been torn. Whatever you were imagining for your life didn't happen. In my case, it was I was hitting my late 20s. And I was still single. I've still only had two relationships in my whole life. I mean, the culture I grew up in, the things that I had aspired for my life said that I should have been married before I was 28. I turned 30 this year, so that didn't happen. And I've had to reconcile that with myself and the Lord and figuring out what, you know, you can't put time restrictions on your life. So whatever her pretty dreams were, whether they were running off to LA and becoming an actress or having children or whatever it is, they're not coming true. They haven't come true. And, you know, it can lead to bitterness, which he acknowledges, you know, with she sits on the porch, you know, with the eyes of one who hates just for being born. Like, you can get so depressed and down on your life that you're just like, why am I even here? What's the point of living? Another one of those adult crises that often happens more than once. Where you're just like, I'm alive and I'm living, because she's kind of in the same state as the guys back in the middle section who are, you know, dying little by little and piece by piece. She's in that same rut. And the only rescuing that's going on, even though she's in the bowels of depression by the sound of things, is simply him intervening to get her out of her head a little bit. We'll get to that later in the song when they, you know, run off to the beach. But that's the only thing. He's not like, oh, I'm going to fix all your problems. It's just like, hey, babe, let's go get off the porch. The porch, like in Thunder Road, only now this porch, rather than being the launch pad for a future together, is the place she's sitting in a depression. And, you know, she, like I said, you know, She's obviously, you know, depressed with the eyes of one who hates just for being born. And then we switch to the hopeful upshot of that. So, like, the contrast between the guys dying little by little, piece by piece, and those who are going out racing the street, he's intervening in a way to help her find her joy again. He knows he's not the source. So it's a healthy relationship, because he's not like, I can fix your problems because I'm here and I'm the hero. He's like, no, we're going to try and get you out of your head and have a mental health break here, basically. Because, you know, we get to that. Because, like, for all the shutdown strangers and hot rod angels, so all the depressed boys and girls in the world, running through this promised land, tonight my baby and me, we're going to ride to the sea and wash these sins off our hands. Like, I mean, I don't know, most of us find the beach pretty relaxing. And then it's just, also, Bruce can easily be somewhat metaphorical here. Usually washing things, ocean, considered cleansing. Like, water is often a metaphor for cleansing, because, I mean, it's what you wash your hands with. But, you know, he's gonna get her off the porch, get her out of her head, get her to a place where she can feel at peace, where she's not surrounded by things that remind her of the disappointments of her life. She's not on that front porch that she ran off of to get into the car on Thunder Road, that she was dancing in, left to get in the car, and now she's back there reminded of all the aspirations they had when they, you know, blasted off into the sunset at the end of Thunder Road. She's not reminded of that. He's getting her out of that space to go find peace again, you know, that she doesn't fall any further into the path of bitterness by staring at the sky on the porch, hating just being born. Like, it's a beautiful mix of practical hard truths, and then also somewhat metaphorical in the uses of the imagery, but it's still practical. Like, you can view it practically and still get the same takeaway as you can if you view it metaphorically, which is a pretty astonishing songwriting accomplishment, let's be real there, to be able to say things in both plain speech, and then the things that you could metaphorically read into it are both the same. They are just parallel lines of the same themes. It's pretty impressive songwriting. Yet again, this is why Bruce Springsteen, in my opinion, is the greatest songwriter ever. You can fight me on this. I have a sword. Okay, it's a replica of Sting from Lord of the Rings, but still, it's a sword enough. It's a large elven dagger, to be exact. Anyways, I will fight somebody on this one. Bruce's songwriting, when it comes to comprehending the souls of the individuals who make up a society, his songwriting is incomparable. I can't think of anyone else who does it, especially as well as he does. And then, you know, the closing lines are just them heading off into a future that's not quite the bright, shiny, upbeat future that they were heading off to at the end of Thunder Road. It's a much more reality-based one, where they're just trying to solve adult problems. Because he's like, tonight, tonight, the highway's bright. Out of our way, mister, you best keep. Because summer's here, the time is right for racing in the street. Which, slight less topical song note here and more fun history, was sort of his way of giving a nod to Dancing in the Street by, was that Supremes? Anyways, whichever 60s girl group did Dancing in the Street, this was his way of giving an homage to that. Because, I mean, this whole song is saturated, as we've discussed, with allusions to 60s pop. You've got the cars and the girls and all those themes, but they're no longer teenage. They're adult. They're real world. Way more real world than even a lot of other, you know, adult rock artists would do. I mean, even in a way, Bruce Springsteen is more deeply probing into the human soul even than Jackson Brown. Or at least he's more plain spoken about it. It's less sort of impressionistic and more just straight reality-based, in-your-face illustrations of living. And that's why I love his songwriting so much, and that's why this song helped me start trying to find my life again, because I didn't want to be sitting on the porch with the eyes of one who hates for just being born anymore. I didn't want to give up on life just because I'd turned 25 and nothing that I had aspired to happening in my life had happened yet. And since then, and the growth that I went through starting around 25, 26, since then, I've had lots of growth. And I don't sit on the porch, you know, and I don't cry myself to sleep, except for my problem wasn't crying myself to sleep, it was I couldn't cry anymore at all, unless it was out of fear or anger. I couldn't just feel my emotions, I would just, you know, shut down everything. And so now we're back to not being the people dying little by little bit and piece by piece, but going out and racing in the street, whatever that looks like in your life. Finding the source, things that give you joy and help you to grow as a better human being, and doing those. And having courage and being kind to each other. Like the live-action Cinderella so eloquently emphasizes. I love that movie. Anyways, that's been this week's episode, quite possibly my last episode, unless I have some sort of prompting to continue, unless something happens that makes me feel like that's what I should do. I feel like I mainly need to take the pressure off, because I was feeling very pressured to write, to do an episode every week, get it done on a certain day, post it at a certain time, and I just didn't have space for that in my life anymore. Especially, like, I have two guitars that I seldom play, because I don't have time to practice and do everything else I have to do as an adult. I have two semi-finished novels that I should, and a bunch more ideas for creative writing that I could pursue, but I didn't have the time. There's only so many hours in the day and so much you can do, and I'm trying to do what will be the most fruitful and give me the most joy, what will be my version of racing in my streets for my life, and stop me. This just doing this podcast did help me get out of the rut where I was dying little by little, piece by piece, and didn't know what I was doing with my life or what I could offer. I know now that I can offer fun musical factoids and knowledge and history to people, and I will continue to do so just in a less rigid and regular manner. Like I said, I will be posting things on my Instagram. I'm taking a small break simply because I don't want to even go within 40 feet of social media this week. And I'm going to try and not waste time on Instagram when I do get it back on my phone, because that's a problem. But yeah, I will have my Instagram, which is at Rambling with Rosie, post content there about various artists and things like I do here. You know, it'll be text posts instead of audible. And if I do feel that I need to do like a verbal ramble about something, I can do short videos for my Instagram, and I'll probably post those on my YouTube as well. And if I need to do a really long ramble about something because it's that awesome, I'll just post it on my YouTube, and that's also Ramble On with Rosie. And maybe Ramble On with Rosie Lee on YouTube, but you can find it in the link on my bio in Instagram via the blog that I have, which is a WordPress blog, which I'll be posting probably the same. If it's a long text post I put on Instagram and y'all don't have Instagram, you can find it on the WordPress blog, which is also at Ramble On with Rosie. It's very easy to remember. Just find that and search wherever you search and things should come up. But it has been a joy and a privilege and an honor bringing all y'all classic rock content. I appreciate everyone who has ever listened to this. Thank you. I needed it at that point in my life. Needed to feel like I could release for all this fun musical knowledge I have now. And I still want to share what I know, but I will be doing it in a different and less pressured way in future, both for the sake of my mental health and just, you know, not killing the joy that I get out of sharing musical knowledge. It was becoming a chore instead of a joy because of how I had structured it and the pressure I'd put on myself to do it this way. So, Instagram, YouTube, and WordPress blog, all at Ramble On with Rosie. And my Instagram also posts to a Facebook page, which is Ramble On with Rosie as well. And so if you want to find any of my new content that I will be putting out, I will be putting it out on those sites, mainly the Instagram and the blog on WordPress, and the rest we shall see. Like I said, I may occasionally do a long ramble on and post it on YouTube, but I'll be trying to keep things more succinct in either text post or small video on Instagram format. And those videos that I put on Instagram will also probably be posted to YouTube as well. So that's where to find me in future. Like I said, I appreciate each and every one of you who have listened to my podcast and supported me just by the mere numerical figures when I see, you know, the number of listens. I thank you because it helped me know that there were people who wanted to hear what I had to say about music. And I'll continue saying it just on those platforms I mentioned in future, and probably not as a podcast anymore. But enjoy. Have a wonderful life. Race in your streets, whatever that looks like in your life. And be kind to each other. Be really, really kind to each other. Especially these days with all the divisiveness going on. Be extra super kind and compassionate and understanding towards people of different viewpoints. And just don't be judgmental and be loving and kind. Kindness. Always kindness. Above anything else. Kindness. And yes, sometimes kindness is a confrontation, but still kindness, where the other person's good is your utmost goal, not beating them over the head and telling them how right you are. So just be kind to each other and rock on. God bless y'all.